Okay, I want to thank everybody for coming today to the presentation. Purpose of this talk is to focus more on the application of social determinant of health indicator and data work. So we have a lot of research, and it's very brilliant and things, but our focus is more like what do we do with it once the research has been done, and we're more or less settled on the conclusions. So let me just set up the framework. So I have no relationships to disclose. And just a brief description of what VARHI is, the Bay Area Regional Health Inequities Initiative. We are a collaborative of 10 city and county health departments within the San Francisco Bay Area. And our mission is to transform public health practice for the purpose of limiting health inequities using a broad spectrum of approaches that create healthy communities. At least from my perspective, we're really emphasizing the word transform. Because public health is great, but considering the challenges are changing and we're becoming more aware of what the new challenges are, we have to rethink how we're approaching public health in general. And so local health departments, since we're on the front lines, I think we're very well positioned to begin to tackle some of that issue. So the data committee is composed of some very brilliant epidemiologists working in city and county health departments, so I'm very honored to be able to work with this group. And over the past couple years, we have been developing a guide basically that explains how to collect social determinant of health indicator data at the local level. And what I mean to collect, and we actually include screenshots, we actually show health departments how to do this. I mean, our main audience is for local health departments that traditionally don't do this work. So in this guide, we define what these indicators actually are. We recommend and show how to collect and analyze. So we have thoughts on how to go to the census, download data, what sort of formula we recommend using, how to display the data. We recommend how to examine these indicators in the context of traditional health morbidity mortality data. So epidemiologists traditionally are trained to work in these three areas. We show just how to go one step beyond that. And then we show examples currently that are going on in the Bay Area where health departments have actually taken data and used that in program designing and intervention. And we think this is the most important. And as epidemiologists, I think that is something that we really need to do better at. So it's not just we hand something off. Somebody needs to do something with it, and epidemiologists really need to be involved in that, in that process. I mean, that's less time crunching numbers, but again, in terms of transforming what EPI is and what public health practice is, I mean, the data and the program people really need to work better together. And so this guide just kind of is introductory to these ideas. And finally, we do our best to respond to known limitations of these indicators. So there's many. The thing is, this should not paralyze local social determinant of health indicator work within the counties or local health jurisdictions. So just to briefly describe how we think of social determinant of health living condition indicators, this is the VARHI framework, and it's been around for about 6 or 7 years, and it's very influential in California, in the Bay Area. So I'll just briefly go over it. So if you start at the right, we have mortality as the ultimate health outcome. And as you notice, differences in racial ethnic disparities across this course. But so we have mortality, and then moving to the left, we have different rates in disease and injury. Moving further beyond one step before that, we have risk behaviors. So there's differences in risk behaviors, differences that lead to differences in disease and injury, which lead to differences in mortality across different population groups. And moving back from risk behaviors, we have differences in living conditions. So building on the theme, there are differences in living conditions, which VARHI believes influences differences in risk behaviors among populations, leading to differences in health outcomes. And then all those living conditions, we believe, are outcomes of various forms of institutional power, corporations and businesses, governments, schools, laws, even what nonprofits do. And then there's also just a social inequality aspect that influences institutional power, and we move down the social gradient, and resulting in differences in outcomes, health outcomes. So the guide currently just focuses on the living conditions. And we started with about 200 or so different data points and various living condition indicators, and we narrowed our list down to about 15. And so over the course of the next year, as we complete the chapters, we'll just include our data points and how to cut and analyze the data frame local health equity work. Okay, so let me just go through the really core recommendations. Now, I know this is maybe maybe a little elementary, but we think every health department needs to be doing this, and not just reading another report, but doing this within their own jurisdiction. And so the first one, which is pretty obvious, but it's important, is to analyze morbidity and mortality data to show health disparities and prioritize places and populations for further public health surveillance and evaluation. So this chart here is life expectancy by neighborhood poverty rate and by race ethnicity for the San Francisco Bay Area region. Now, this chart has been shown in front of all Board of Supervisors, basically in front of some very important policy decision makers. If I could recommend one chart that every health department do, that this is it. So as you notice, as we increase neighborhood poverty, we notice we have differences in life expectancy at birth for different race ethnicities. And we notice that some racial and ethnic groups respond differently to neighborhood poverty, but at all levels it exists. So this is just the first step to identifying the neighborhoods and populations where policy work needs to happen, public health practice needs to happen, that sort of thing. And then the other really important indicator that we recommend looking at is educational attainment. So neighborhood poverty and educational attainment, if you recall our framework, are outcomes of institutional power. So this is something that policymakers can do something about. And the question is for a local health department that doesn't always have the resources, where do we start? And so graphs like this is like the first step, doing our best to link neighborhood poverty to health outcomes. So again, it's a very similar pattern to neighborhood poverty. There are differences by race and ethnicity across the strata. And finally, we certainly recommend the importance of GIS. This is the life expectancy chart, and as you notice, this is Alameda County. This houses the cities of Oakland and Berkeley. And as you notice, the neighborhoods with lowest life expectancy are sort of clustered in certain areas. So being able to show this visually on a map in very plain English and very simply, and we certainly emphasize that in the guide, just making sure to keep this as accessible to people as possible, the policy interventions need to occur. It shows very clearly where health departments need to start if they haven't already done so. And a very important thing that we recommend doing is to track trends in progress in reducing mortality. So this is, I wish I could have brought with me to Boston, but we're still geocoding our death certificate data, so it's not available now, but this is a plug for the guide. This will be out in 2014, and we'll have an analysis about, how did life expectancy change between the census? And we think this is going to be very powerful to see how health departments have been doing and how society in general has been doing, addressing health inequities and improving health. So the second recommendation along those lines is like every health department needs to know how to work with census data, if anything else. And so again, we make it as easy as possible. It's a lot easier than it was 5 years ago to work with the census. We include screenshots. And we also show recommended ways to cut the data. So if you have GIS software, recommend one method. If you don't have GIS software, we recommend a way to play with a spreadsheet to cut the data. So this is our end product, very similar to the life expectancy chart. This is just the area of the Bay Area, and this is neighborhood poverty, people living below 200% of the federal poverty cutoff. I'll get to the themes later. In terms of the gray areas, I'll get to that point later. But anyway, this is like the end product, and from this, health departments need to start asking what's going on in certain areas that account for differences, and what are the living conditions. Okay, so our third recommendation, we're moving past our mortality and our census data, and now we're getting to the actual indicators, like crime data, income, some of the presentations we've seen today. So again, we recommend that every health department actually use indicators to identify and monitor priority places and populations over time. So it's taking these data and fitting it to those two recommendations we said earlier. So as an example, this is the number of people reporting food insecurity that are living below 200% poverty. Now, this is from the California Health Interview Survey. And we really stress the importance of tracking trends over time where possible. As you notice, just after 2007, how food insecurity had increased dramatically for people living in poverty. And, again, this really helps kind of emphasize the point of what happened during the recession, how it impacts living conditions and quality of life. And again, we're still seeing some racial and ethnic disparities, across time. And again, some racial and ethnic groups have had different responses to prevalence of food insecurity. But again, having this trend chart is very very important because this is, again, the first step to monitoring how we're doing and the health of the population. All right, so this is rates of violent crime in the San Francisco Bay Area, and again, we include screenshots how to download and work with this. So these cities have the highest rates of violent crime in the Bay Area. And again, the part that I stress is monitoring trends, because as you notice, the cities with the highest rates of crime have dropped in a couple years, fell for a couple years. Now, you can run the statistical significance, but just to begin to start the dialogue. And as you notice, the other two cities, let's see, this is Richmond and Antioch, have remained basically flat. So from a health department perspective, you've identified your priority areas, areas with the highest rates of disease, and since we can't always do everything at once, we have to make set our priorities. So being able to look at a trend chart and begin to ask questions about why have some cities declined over time while some cities have remained flat. So this is the first step an epidemiologist can take to his director and to help frame the dialogue, focus the dialogue about what a health department can do to address crime. And so our fourth recommendation, getting to the actual application of these data, this is just going back to graduate school, our 10 essential public health services. I mean, this is pretty standard, but because every local health department, even in the Bay Area, is structured very differently, we thought this was going to be the simplest and most universal outside the Bay Area. And so we believe that SDOH indicator work most fits the monitor health service, the diagnose investigate service, and the evaluate service, and to a lesser degree, system management and the informant empower. But the top three services are, that's where we think indicator work most fits in. And we believe if that's done well and if it's done right, then things like system management and the informant empower will be that much easier for a health department to do. And the other service that we really recommend and we think is the best way for a local health department to overcome the numerous and many data limitations is the mobilized community partnerships. So because education and crime are not in the purview of health departments, but basically societies ask public health to address these interventions, we must build partnerships with these other domains. And we think doing indicator work is the first step for a health department to do that. Some of the other advantages to this is these local agencies, school districts, and police departments have access to data that a health department doesn't have access to. And so through those partnerships, we are able to acquire those data and really create a comprehensive picture of what's going on in the living conditions. So there's a lot more that the crime rate chart doesn't tell you. You need to go ask the police department what they know about crime. And so that's how you complete the mosaic to really assess the situation. So this obviously leads to how we can develop health and health policies. Data is a way for a health department to get its foot in the door and with some of these other agencies. If we can pool data together successfully, then pooling resources will become easier. Because we've established trust, we've worked together sharing data, we can easily share resources next. Again, this is how we address data limitations. This is a public health accreditation requirement. So local health departments are going to be asked to do more of this. And this really helps communities understand and reinforce their concerns about what they feel that their living conditions are. So to show data showing high crime, again, helps move the dialogue along. So, and then finally, we do our best to include examples of partnerships where this has actually happened. So where a health department has partnered with a local agency and this data sharing has occurred, we've shared the indicators, and then we start moving on to policy interventions. And so the examples that we talk about with the Alameda County Public Health Department, they are tracking school absenteeism. So through a partnership, they are working with the school district, and the Alameda County has brought their expertise in doing indicator work, and they have identified that asthma is a significant cause of school absenteeism. So they are providing other public health services to the school district to help youth with asthma actually attend school. My work in East Palo Alto, we have partnered with the police department there, and I was able to obtain gunshot data. They have ShotSpotter able to put coordinates to gunshots in the city. So I've acquired that, and we're designing a very innovative program to high crime areas that we're able to identify. Now, without this partnership, me going to a police department asking for data, I wasn't gonna get anywhere. But because there was an approach and we were able to make the case for public health, that we were able to build a partnership, and this is very the work. And some of the other work I've been doing to address food insecurity, I've been partnering with the local food bank and our own the County Human Service Agency, which administers our food stamps for the county, and we've been sharing data to try to improve our food insecurity services within the county. So again, this wouldn't happen if me just going cold calling. We build a partnership and a relationship, and we've all been sharing data among the three agencies to try and, again, identify the areas where we need to rethink the sort of services we're delivering to food insecure individuals. So that's the overview of the guide. I have, if you're interested, we have a little postcard that has a link to it. Everything's going to be out in spring at some point. So please take a look at it. We want this to be as useful to public health practice as possible, so I certainly enjoy and welcome feedback. That's basically it. So does anybody have any questions? Or? Yeah. Yeah. Sure, sure. Yeah, and Barhai has been around for about 10 years. About 10 or 12 years to address this stuff. And so when everybody has kind of a stage to go through. So when it first started, it's like, well, what do we do? How do we define this? And then the second issue was, well, how do we, like you said, I mean, this is an issue that even happens in some, it just depends kind of who's the director and the people there. So Barhai, at least in the area, has organized trainings. This is always a work in progress to frame the language to make a case for being more concerned about health inequity and disparities. I mean, I personally think about it's just these are your residents, and each resident, wherever you are on the social economic scale, have different health needs. And so it's about improving health of all populations. And if it's a senior citizen in fall prevention, that's a specific sort of need. But for some communities, if it's family support, I mean, that's something that they need to be healthy. So it's always a work in progress. The thing is just to not give up. You just have to keep making the message, and people do eventually come around. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah, and that's where I think we really need to work to get all local health departments to move up, to step up and do this work And again, we try and make it as easy as possible. We understand the resource challenges. But like you said, people want to see their own data about residents, about, you know, their people and their communities. And, I mean, they want to see this. And, you know, we've had this aha moment too many times. Again, the same maps keep showing up, whatever county it is. And, you know, again, it supports our whole framework, and it just makes the point that it's really about policy decisions. And thanks. So, but yeah, thank you for your comment. Great, thank you very much. I hope so, that's the point. So.
Sure.
Yeah. I just wanted to ask about, I guess, the second step, like assuming you have a health department on board, which I know is a big assumption.
Right.
Do you have any tips, because you have really great interagency data sharing and partnerships, mm-hmm. and I know a lot of times you have, you know, an overworked police department that doesn't particularly want to highlight problems, an overworked education department.
Right.
Do you have any tips about how you've built those partnerships?
I had that in mind when we were writing the recommendation. So the first thing is we assign our priority areas. You know, like, you know, I show the high crime rates. And so that's where we start with. And again, you can't do every police department at once. So you have to kind of select. And this is where kind of the political and the program side get into it. So, you know, the data says these are our priorities. And so that's where we start. Part of it is just general relationship building. With East Palo Alto, we were just lucky to have a very progressive police chief. So I mean, the thing that comes up is, like, who's kind of there and who's in development. But the thing is, if this becomes successful, and again, this becomes a sales job for public health services, because if we really believe in evaluation and monitoring, and we were able to show that if you put police officers in high crime areas teaching fitness classes, Fit Zone Project is the name of it, and we've seen a reduction in gunshots, then other police departments are going to come on slowly. So basically it's to be as successful as possible. And really, I mean, it's really selling the services. Like, we believe that taking care of populations and not just, you know, the area of crime and, like, incarcerating them, there's other factors that public health knows about. And, you know, we live and breathe this stuff that maybe law enforcement doesn't always get. Same thing for on the medical care side, too, you know, that's the way that we build relations. And eventually they'll come around. So,
I have a couple of questions. Do the other health departments in other counties have the competencies to carry out your recommendations? And then how is your work in this specific area funded? Are you especially funded to do this? It seems to me extra work than to your daily.
Sure. Okay, so the first thing about the competencies, we do our best. This isn't a textbook, epidemiology textbook. This is like a field guide or a guide. So we show screenshots, basically how to actually download the data and do this. If it's a national easy data, so some of the indicators are a little more complicated, and it's a little beyond what a health department can do. So, but some of these are very easy to do. And the second thing, our audience we wrote this guide, The Language and the Steps. I mean, there's actual step one, go to the census, step two, this is the link you find. I mean, we laid out, we try to make it as simple as possible. We wrote this so a graduate student intern or a public health intern could do these steps. So we don't get into, very complicated stuff here. So just to get all health departments to a basic level. And then in terms of the extra work comment, you know, I'm fortunate that we kind of support this. And, I mean, the theme that comes, you really have to have champions at the upper level going to, you know, at the direct level. So we all are really engaged in health equity. So I'm very fortunate to have this opportunity. But again, to the question I just said before, if we can show success and we can show that we're actually improving health and population, then this is how it gets disseminated. And if we are more successful in applying and seeking grant funding, so, you know, just another story, I helped a food insecurity program secure money for to do food stamp outreach at the county fair. Why? Because I knew how to download census data and say, these are the zip codes with the highest level of people living in rural poverty. Very simple, but it really helped her out. So, again, we have to show how successful we are. Yeah, the other question is to how we're funded. So, because very fortunate where I'm at, Bar High, so we do seek external grants to fund three staff people. And then the rest of it is all county health department in-kind contributions. So basically, I'm being paid for the general fund to do this work. But again, I mean, we're all very committed to making this a success, and we're all very committed to really addressing health inequities. And we think this is how a piece of extra work becomes the standard of practice. This is how every county in the nation knows where their census tracts are, and eventually every county will know what sort of policies and programs are going into those tracts. And the community is going to be engaged, and this is how things change, and this is how public health becomes even better. So, anything else? All right, thank you for your comments. And if you're interested, here's a postcard at the back to the link. So, thanks.